There is only one thing to talk about this edition, and that is everything is changing. Hello and welcome back to the Castle Podcast, brought to you through Podbean and available on your smart devices. However, this is the last edition of the Bisque Podcast. But wipe away your tears and put that lower lip back into place, for never fear, there will still be a podcast, but we, like the rest of the castle, are going through an identity change. Stay tuned for more, but first, the news. We have new leadership, new directions, and a new identity. There really is only one story for me to tell you about this week, and that is about the castle's change in directions. As of June 2022, we will no longer be the Bader International Study Centre. Principal Patrick Dean came to the UK in June to unveil our new brand identity, and henceforth the Bisque will be known as Bader College, Queen's University. Yes, the Bisque is now a thing of the past as we stride boldly into the future as Bader College. In related news, we have new leadership at Bader College. Dr. Hugh Horton, the Vice Provost, Executive Director of the Bader International Study Centre, steps down from his role at the castle after 5 years of stewardship. We here at the Bader Podcast thank him for his service to the Bisque and wish him luck in his future endeavours. We are currently conducting a search for a new Executive Director, but in the meantime, we are in the very safe hands of Dr. Jennifer Medvez, who will be providing us guidance and leadership until a new Executive Director can be sourced. I spoke with Dr. Medvez earlier this week, and here she is to explain more about the castle's rebranding project and her role at Bader College.
Hello, I'm here with Jennifer Medvez. Jennifer, could you please introduce yourself to the students?
My name is Jennifer Medvez. I am the interim Vice Provost and Executive Director of Bader College. I have been an academic since 2000 and worked at Queen's University. And I came over here last August and will be in position until a new Vice Provost is appointed.
And you said your title is Vice Provost Executive Director. What exactly does that involve and how will you interact with the students with that role?
As the Vice Provost, I am responsible ultimately for the academic experience of all students who are here at Bader College. And as the Executive Director, I'm responsible for the castle and the grounds, and which are extensive. There are 600 acres. So really, it's up to me to make the final decisions about anything that happens on campus.
So if anyone asks, you're the boss.
I am the boss.
Excellent. And you have some exciting news to announce, is that correct?
I do. As of 2 weeks ago, we are now officially Bader College, which is the way that we have evolved from the Bader International Study Centre, which, while an appropriate term 25 years ago, today implies that we're a language school, and we do need people to know in the UK that Queen's University Bader College is part of the university in Canada and is an academic setting.
Okay, so we are now Bader College, Queen's University. That sounds like a really good progressive change.
It certainly is a progressive change, and it's come about because of the maturity of the programmes that we've been able to offer. We do have many undergraduate programmes that we can offer to students, either as a full first year or to upper year students who can come for one term.
Okay, and so students who get here, they may then find other students from other programmes, perhaps health mm-hmm. sciences or perhaps sciences. So we're not just an arts institution.
That's exactly right. We are an arts and science. So we have students who are registered in the Faculty of Arts and Science. We also have Faculty of Education students, and they would be in the concurrent education programme, taking either arts with Con Ed or science with Con Ed. We also have a health sciences programme, which leads towards the Bachelor of Health Sciences. We can have upper year students in any of those programmes as well.
So it sounds like it's going to be a really vibrant campus this year.
it certainly is going to be a very vibrant campus. Last year we did run just coming out of COVID, and we didn't have as many students as we would have liked. But this year it looked like we're going to be a full house, which is very exciting.
Fantastic. Do you have any other final words for the students?
We look forward to seeing you in September. We have lots of programming planned for you for those times outside of your class, including experiential learning opportunities. And we'll be able to give you advice and show you some of both the local amenities and how to travel and get to other places.
So to the students, if you start getting letters from Bader College, don't throw them away. That's us. We used to be the Bader International Study Center, or the BISC, and now we will be communicating to you as Bader College. Look for our new logo coming soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer.
So to clarify, the Bader International Study Center, while still providing our usual high-quality education, small classes, and experiential learning opportunities, will be doing so from now on as Bader College, Queen's University. This does, however, mean that many things will be changing their name and identity. For example, the BISC 100 101 core courses will be changing to Bader 100 and Bader 101. Look for that in the coming terms and on PeopleSoft. And that means that this podcast, too, will need to be renamed and reinvented. We cannot continue to call ourselves the BISC Podcast, and so it is time for a new name. I'll be putting that to a vote, and a new version of this podcast will be unveiled in July. Current possible names are The Castle Drum, The Earless Drummer, or Sounds Like Bader College. And that's all for the news. We had an exciting year in 2021-2022, where we had a soft start back into live teaching. We spent the year vigilantly watching for any changes to the coronavirus pandemic, but we managed to run 3 full terms of in-person classes and education. Congratulations to the staff and faculty for doing so. We are now looking forward to an exciting 2022-2023 academic year, and we expect a full house of keen arts, sciences, health sciences, con ed, and upper year students to fill our halls and classrooms. But what can you expect in the coming year? We have an excellent package of research opportunities for undergraduate students, and here is Dr. Claire Kennan to tell you a little bit about some of our research possibilities for the incoming students.
Hello, Claire. How are you doing?
Hi, Rob. I'm good. How are you?
Good. Could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Dr. Claire Kennan, and I'm the research coordinator and history lecturer at Bader College.
And your role as the research coordinator, are you in contact with students much? Is this a student-facing role?
It is absolutely a student-facing role. I look after pretty much all of our student undergraduate research, whether that is summer placements, various projects they might be working on with other faculty members, or getting them to contribute to our research blog, offering training sessions. So yeah, lots of student-facing activity.
Excellent. So this podcast is for the summer SOAR, that's the student orientation. So if students are coming to the castle in September, what kind of research activities could they expect to encounter?
We've got some really exciting opportunities looking at the history and heritage of Hurstmonceux Castle, which is where you'll be studying with us at Bader College. We have an archive here that we're currently cataloguing and working our way through. So there's lots of opportunities for students to get hands-on experience researching in our very own archive. We have a really exciting project that looks at the history of the castle during the 1920s, and we are actually going to be recording a radio play that was written by someone who lived locally all about the castle during the 20s. So that's a very exciting project that we've got coming up. We also have a lot of projects that look at our environment. So we have a wonderful estate that's got lots of exciting species and biodiversity happening. So you can actually work with our science coordinator to help sort of record that and to look after the various environments that we have on site. And there's a fantastic project that's run every year, the Learning Theory Project, which is where students can work with faculty members, dogs and puppies, and see sort of how they learn and behave and interact with humans. So there's something really for everyone here at the castle, which is great.
You mentioned the castle's history and the local castle, and I hear there's some work with a 1921 census. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. So earlier this year, the 1921 census was released to the public for the first time. So a census is a big survey of everyone who is living in the UK. But once that information is taken, it's sort of under lock and key for 100 years for privacy reasons. So in January, when the 1921 census was opened, we can actually look for the first time to find out who was living and working at the castle on the night that that survey was taken. And that was actually quite interesting because we knew that the owner, Colonel Claude Lowther, was normally here during the summer months and the census took place in the summer. But he wasn't home. In fact, out of all his 15 beautifully refurbished rooms, he only had two elderly servants at home. So he was actually busy up in London causing trouble in the House of Commons at the time. But it's been really interesting because we've been able to trace various members of his family, other employees, seeing where they were, and getting a bit of an idea of the social makeup of the castle as it was 100 years ago.
The castle seems to do a lot of work with microhistories. Could you explain what a microhistory is?
So a microhistory is when you look really at a very specific place, sort of very, very localised. So that could be something as small as an individual building, like the castle itself. I mean, it could even be the history of a room within the castle. Sometimes it can be slightly larger, so it could be a street or a small village, but it's something on a very small scale. It's very focused geographically and usually also chronologically as well. So the 1920s project is a great example of a microhistory that we're undertaking at the castle at the moment.
Excellent. So it looks like there's an awful lot of stuff for the students to look forward to for this year.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Claire.
Thanks, Rob.
And finally, the BISC has a great package of experiential learning opportunities lined up for the 2022-2023 academic year. As we head back to life without restrictions, we are currently preparing a great package of student mobility opportunities that will place students to do research in the field and take in trips to London, Oxford, Brighton, and even Paris, France. I spoke with our experiential learning coordinator, Dr. Ruth Saraceda, to explain more.
Hello, Ruth. How are you doing?
Hello, very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. We're going to talk about experiential learning opportunities, but first off, I have a big question. What is experiential learning?
Right, so experiential learning is the basic pedagogy at Bayard College. All the courses at Bayard College has an experiential learning component, and basically it means a process of learning through experience, but not just learning through practical experience, but learning through reflection on doing. So it's a mixture of hands-on experience, practical experience, plus reflection on what that experience entails.
Okay. Now, earlier I've heard you give an example of riding a bicycle. Could you explain how that is experiential learning?
So a very simple example of what experiential learning is about is hopping on a bicycle and learning how to ride it rather than listening to your parents what it's about and what it feels like, and then having a sort of reflection opportunity on how the learning about riding the bicycle went.
So how did I do that? And then a kid might think, okay, I'm going to try and pop a wheelie. How will I do that? And exactly. So the experience is part of, and reflection is part of the experience. Okay, that makes sense in practical terms. But how do you apply that to a classroom?
So for instance, something that we do in our history, right, is to learn about a series of artistic periods or artists, general characteristics, and we look at a series of examples of well-known works of art. And then I take my students to maybe the British Museum or the National Gallery, and I expose them to new works that somehow fit with those periods that we've studied in class, but they're not exactly the works of art that they've studied. So they need to apply that knowledge that they've acquired in class to analyze and to learn about those new works of art that they experience for the first time in the museum.
Oh, I see. But then where does the reflection play into it afterwards?
The reflection has to do with the analysis that they create of those new works of art, how they create new knowledge about those works of art, how do they apply what they know and what is coming out of that application, what type of knowledge are they gaining about those works of art by applying what they know.
Okay, now I can see how this works for courses like art history or history, where they might go to an archive and look at primary sources. But surely this can't be useful for all courses, this method of learning.
No, experiential learning is applicable to all disciplines, to all courses, to all specializations. In science, you might be able to learn in class about chemical components in water, for instance, or in sewage water, and then go to the sewage system at the castle and take samples and analyze the water there and see what is the composition in this specific part of the country, for instance, or this specific area, and apply that knowledge at the youth aquarium class to create a reflection or create extra information about the type of water that we experience in this area.
Okay, so it's a marriage between theory and practice.
Exactly. It's a way to connect the theories and the knowledge that they acquire in class to real-world scenarios.
And where would students then do this? Just on campus?
No, some experiential learning opportunities happen on campus. Sometimes we have experts that come to work here with the students in specific projects or workshops. In other cases, we go away from campus, we go off-site, and we might go and visit museums like the British Museum or the National Gallery. Or if we go to Paris, in the past we've gone to the Louvre, or we've gone to the Musée d'Orsay, or we go to specific archives like the very close by interesting archive that is called the Keep, or some of the big London archives. So there are many, many different places where the students go and experience. So it dependent on what the specialization is, what the course is, there would be an ELO that is designed specific to fit that specialization and that course.
I suppose the end goal for university studies is to get a job, and this is a way of exposing students to workplace experience, is that correct?
Exactly, because one of the key elements of experiential learning and of the active learning approach that we take in our pedagogy is to ease the transition between the academic work and the workplace, and the transferable skills that one experiences and that one works with while engaging with experiential learning allows you to create that jump onto a real work scenario that just might be the workplace.
Oh, that sounds like a really useful program. Thank you for talking to us, Sue.
Thank you very much.
And that's all for this edition of the podcast, and indeed, that's all for the BISC podcast, In That Identity. Look for our new Bader College podcast, debuting in the summer of 2022. And until next time, goodbye.